Okay. Is there anybody here that's not familiar with Bhagavad Gita? Everyone's familiar with Bhagavad Gita. No? You're familiar. Okay. Fine. So I'm going to do a little, just don't flip through the Bhagavad Gita just yet, because I'm going to do a little talking and I need your attention, because the subject matter is going to be through sound first. How do you go? Bhagavad Gita is comprised of 18 chapters, and our acharyas have described that those 18 chapters have divisions of 6 and 6 and 6. 3 times 6 is 18, usually. And the middle 6 chapters, starting with chapter 7 and ending in chapter 12, are primarily speaking of bhakti. Of course, the whole of Bhagavad Gita is about bhakti, but chapter 6, the first set of 6, ends with Krishna making a declarative statement that after presenting a number of systems of yoga, the best of all of them is bhakti. Madgate nantarat mana, mind fixed upon the Supreme within. Shraddhavan, with faith. Bhajate yomam. Bhajat is the root word of bhakti. The topmost system of yoga is bhakti, of all the systems of yoga that he has described. And then, in the beginning of chapter 7, Krishna says, now I'm going to explain how one can develop that topmost system of yoga, topmost stage of yoga. So, 7 through 12 is that. How to, and the distinctions between bhakti and non-bhakti, and bhakti that's mixed, and so forth. And then the final 6 chapters are stating things that have been stated before with more detail of knowledge. So emphasis is on Gyan. Beginning 6 chapters, some emphasis is there on detached work, karma, palatyag, working without attachment to the fruits of work, and that way becoming karma free, working without attachment to the fruits of work, so that one can become karma free. Knowledge brings detachment, karma free work brings detachment. And in that state of detachment, attachment to the Supreme. Ultimately, that detachment has its perfection in attachment to the Supreme. So that's the message of Bhagavad Gita. And this chapter 9, title of its most confidential knowledge, indicates, just like it's, you know, it's if you were to place a point at the middle part of Bhagavad Gita, it's the end of chapter 9 and the beginning of chapter 10. 9 and another 9, right in the middle. And this chapter 9 ends with a verse that Krishna says again in chapter 18, because chapter 18 is restating in a summary way everything that Krishna said before. So the most confidential part of this most confidential knowledge concludes in the stage where one is mind is fixed upon manmana, mind is fixed upon Krishna. Four things. Bhava madbhakto, one becomes his devotee. Madhyaji, one worships Krishna. And Mam Namaskuru, one offers obeisances unto Krishna. Just like your nice son offering obeisances. Endless obeisances. These are external features of the internal quality of devotion. That's the message of the whole Bhagavad Gita. So, a few other things. The most confidential knowledge was preceded by confidential knowledge and more confidential knowledge now. Most confidential knowledge. So confidential knowledge in worldly talk is don't tell anybody. That's one kind of confidential. But this, the kind of confidential knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is Krishna declares it very boldly and it still remains confidential. So it's another kind of confidential. It's that which is very near and dear to us, specifically who we are. Because Arjuna's question in the beginning part of Gita is, what's my duty? So, paraphrasing in a simple way, Krishna is stating to Arjuna, before we talk about what your duty is, let's talk about who you are. Then we can talk about what your duty is. And it's confidential knowledge is distinguishing who we really are from who we aren't. It's a good beginning. Who we really are is we're spirit and we're not the covering of the spirit, gross or subtle. That's where confidential knowledge in Bhagavad Gita chapter 2 begins. So that's confidential. Then more confidential, some persons that may get the confidential part may not get the more confidential part. They may get a little mixed up and think there's no distinction between the soul and the supreme soul. So more confidential knowledge is understanding that distinction. The spirit soul and God, the supreme soul of all souls. There's a distinction. And that's more confidential knowledge. And then most confidential knowledge is to understand the relationship of love, an exchange of loving affection between, in the purified state, the individual soul and the supreme soul. And that's what's discussed here. So in this little presentation, there are three different little images, so in that, in one sense, three different sections, and I'm going to identify the first section in two parts. The first part is kind of like Mahima, the glories of bhakti, and specifically those who, with the qualifications needed to receive it. Because it's received, he says in the very first verse, as he says in the first verse of chapter 7, it's received by the hearing process, by sound, transcendental sound. So everyone can hear transcendental sound, but not everyone can receive the full benefit. So the qualification that one brings to the hearing process, Krishna identifies two things: faith and being non-envious. They're not totally disconnected. Someone that's envious certainly doesn't have faith. One who doesn't have faith, there's part of that not having faith has something to do with who they think they are and pride and envy. So that's the qualification. And then Krishna says that one who is faith less, well, he doesn't go to the good place. He goes to the bad place. He certainly won't understand the message, and the consequence is not favorable. That's just like that's the first three verses. And then it carries on, because Krishna wants to describe to Arjuna, well, chapter 9 follows chapter 8. Brilliant, huh? And in chapter 8, it's called Attaining the Supreme. And you can look in your Gita now. Chapter 8, text 14. Chapter 8, text 14. Ananya Chaita Satatam Yomam Smarati. Smara means remembrance. Yomam Smarati Nitya Shaha. Nitya. Uninterrupted remembrance of Krishna. Where one's mind, is, without deviation, is always upon him. So he's like saying it twice. Those whose minds are always fixed upon me, who always remember me. That's one of the nine processes of bhakti. That's the process by which Prahlad Maharaj achieved what he achieved, spiritual perfection, by always remembering Krishna and never forgetting Krishna. And those of you that have read Nectar Devotion, you know that there are some rules and prohibitions, things to follow, things to be avoided. And Rupa Goswami teaches, according to Padma Purana, there's one principle that they're, all of them are in pursuance of one principle. Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. That's what he's saying here in eighth chapter. To attain the Supreme, always remember Krishna, mind fixed upon him. Tasyaham sudhava. I'm easy to achieve. Sudhava. There's durlava and sudhava. Difficult to achieve and easy to achieve. So, how is that? So that's chapter 18, attaining the Supreme. Chapter 9 is how. So how is the process of devotional service? Now we're going further into chapter 9. In the next seven verses, that's 9:4 through 9:10, Krishna is describing his relationship with the material energy. Because if you're going to engage in devotional service, in our present state, we're spirit soul, we're not the covering, but we have one. We have a body. And we have a subtle body, a mind, intelligence, and false ego. And so, how do we engage in devotional service when we're using matter? What's the relationship between matter and the Supreme? What's the relationship between God and this place? So that's discussed in verses 4 through 10. So that you can understand properly using matter to serve he who is beyond matter. Using the senses to serve he who is beyond the senses. Because one of his names is Adhokshaja. He who is beyond the perception of the senses. But we're meant to directly perceive him. Pratyaksha avagamam dharmyam. Pratyaksha. To see directly, perceive directly. That's the glories of what this, how this chapter begins. How can we see and engage in service to one who is beyond the senses, using the senses? So it's required to understand the relationship. So the relationship is mysterious. And I'll describe it this way. I call it Upanishadic double talk. Those of you that are a little familiar with the Upanishads, like one of our literatures that Prabhupada has translated is Sri Ishopanishad. He's very near, he's very far away as well. He's within everything, he's outside of everything. You know, which is it? This or that? It's this and that. So for the mind, that's a binary function. It's either one or a zero. So it can't be one and a zero. Binary processors can't handle it. So in chapter 9, Krishna says this double talk. I'm within everything and I'm outside of everything. Everything rests in me and everything doesn't rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence, yogam aishwarya. So this is aishwarya yoga. Our acharyas have described it that way. It's his opulence, his mystic opulence. And to explain his mystic opulence, how it's this and that at the same time, he gives a very nice metaphor. The metaphor is a mighty wind blowing in space, but space isn't blowing. So it's really simple. There's this big space, and here goes the wind. While the wind is blowing, the space, what happens to the space? Nothing. Because it's more subtle, and the wind is within space. Those of you that know the types of material energy, earth, water, fire, air, and sky, or space, or akash. Space. So there's air, and air is moving, and with air is moving, then it moves fire and water and earth. So like, you know, the wind is blowing, there goes stuff flying in the air. There goes rain, there goes tree branches, there goes stuff, or, you know, solid, liquid, and fire. But what happens to the space in which the wind is blowing? Nothing. Because it's more subtle. Yes? And so everything is within space. Although stuff is moving, space doesn't move. So Krishna is like that. Krishna is the big sky. A big space, only his person. And what the comparison feature of this metaphor is, everything is within him, but he's outside of everything. As everything moves, he doesn't move. He's unchanging. Because he's the basis and support and the rest of everything. Yet he is unchanging. It's not like stuff changes, so he changes. Or he changes, so stuff changes. He's aloof. He's describing his relationship with matter. And that's, and you know, that's his mystic opulence. And then in a few verses he describes the stages of recognizing him beyond matter and the changes of matter and the transformations of matter. It's all resting in him. Everything comes from him. He sends forth everything. Everything stays for some time. He withdraws everything. And through all of that, he's unchanging. Then he goes on. So now that's two sections. Now we have two more to go. Take your book, if you would, and look at chapter 9, text 15. Jnana yagyena chapyanye yajanto mam upasate ekatvena pratuktvena bahuda vishvato mukham. So now here Krishna is describing three different categories of persons who worship him indirectly. Now here he's being very generous. Very gentle, very broad-minded, saying even they worship me indirectly, they're worshiping me. And he has three categories. Ekatvena. Ekatvena means those who worship themselves as supreme. There's no distinction between, they didn't get the more confidential knowledge part. The distinction between the individual soul and the supreme. They worship themselves thinking I'm supreme. Well, They're not supreme. In a very broad manner, generous manner, Krishna is saying, they're also my devotees. Because there is some conception of the supreme, instead of the people that have no conception of the supreme. They're just, you know, fruitive workers and mudhas and people running around acting like animals. They have some conception of the supreme, and they're worshipping themselves as supreme, or the supreme and I am one. You've heard that expression. Everything is one. I'm God, you're God, everything is one. So that's the notion. And then the second one is Pratakdvena Bahuda. It's worshipping devatas as the supreme. Some people have their favorite devata. Some people, like, I don't want to be discriminatory, they're all God. There's many gods, pantheism. There's some conception of the supreme that's above, you know, matter. And they worship that way. And then the third is those who worship the universal form, Vishvato Mukham. Universal form, just because that's coming up, the 11th chapter. There's a whole chapter dedicated to it. There's several verses in chapter 9 that are introducing it. Now, these are the verses that go from 11 till about 22. Those are describing those that are worshipping, well, those that are worshipping Krishna indirectly. There's two verses where Krishna is speaking those that worship me directly. But most of it is the indirect. It's something like, listen carefully. A good definition is something that's inclusive and exclusive at the same time. Like, if I know somebody is going to India and I ask them, can you purchase some mridanga for me? I said, sure. I don't know what a mridanga is. Can you describe a mridanga to me? Sure. It's a drum. Okay, it's a drum. And it's not a drum that has one head, it has two heads. Oh. But it's not two different pieces, it's one on this end and one on that end. Oh. But it's not made of wood, because there's some that are made of wood, it's made of clay. Oh. And it's not those ones that you tighten with a, you know, little instrument. It's just leather straps and, oh. And then there's one end that's big and one end that's small. Oh. They're not ends of the same size. Because you can have different kinds of drums. So you say what it is, what it isn't. Then you have, you know, if you don't know what a mridanga is, now you at least have a definition that's with some clarity. So you take anything under the sun. Rupa Goswami does this about bhakti. He says what bhakti isn't and what bhakti is. That's a good definition. It's not karma and gyan mixed. It's just bhakti, unmixed. So that's what this is doing. This little section is, there's bhakti that's unmixed, and then there's bhakti that's mixed, and there's bhakti that's, well, avidhi purvakam. It's like, they're making a mistake. Avidhi, done without proper understanding. Vid means to know. Avidhi purvakam. Well, they have a conception. They're not envious of the Supreme, but, you know, they don't know exactly where the target is. So they're aiming over there or over there. It's just, you know, but Krishna says, that's okay. It's actually meant for me, and so I accept it. And by Krishna's accepting it, gradually they can find out where the target is. And, you know, by proper guidance, through knowledge. So there are sections, and you'll hear this very nicely narrated and put together. By the way, this was put together for children at a Bhagavad Gita camp, chapter 9. You know, take children to. So there's two verses in this section, verses 13, 14, where Krishna, out of this whole section, he's describing unmixed devotion, because that's the bullseye, that's the center of the target. Unmixed devotion, you know, the process to reach the Supreme. They know it is the Supreme, there's nothing in their heart but the Supreme. Something like what was described in chapter 8. Ananya Cheta Satatam Nitya Yukta Suyoginaha. But then there's those that are in this three other categories. So Krishna elaborates on them and he indicates the destination of each one, because the destination is different. Very clear. I mean, repeatedly explicit. Although there are some teachers that say Yatama Tatupat. Whatever path you follow, you get the same result. That's not what Krishna says. He's very clear, multiple times. This leads to this, that leads to that, the other leads to another place. So, we want to be very clear about the object of devotion, not unclear or mistaken. So then the last section, we're almost done, the last section is describing unmixed devotion. Here. The last section is describing unmixed devotion and the, for me, the most confidential part of the most confidential knowledge is how Krishna feels and how he regards that unmixed devotion. He recognizes it. And he even if he's reciprocating for this indirect, what to speak of his reciprocation for the direct? Whoa. And there's another verse that paraphrases this little section. Yeyatam mam prapadyante tam sadaiva pajamyaham. The verse says, Krishna says, as they prapadyante, as they surrender unto me, or as they regard me, then I reciprocate. As they regard me, it's love. They regard me this way, I reciprocate this way. They regard me that way, I reciprocate that way. Because he's the reservoir of all love, the reservoir of all rasa. And so some persons are in relationship with him of servitude, some as friend, some as parent, some as conjugal love. And there's other persons that are in maya. And they have, you know, dvesha. They have disregard. They have, like, an attitude toward Krishna. So Krishna doesn't, like, okay, you're going to have an attitude towards me, smack. It's not like that. He just, he very lovingly arranges a situation for those persons to recognize it's not a happy position. Please come to the happy position. He's reciprocating with each of us. And those that have this unmixed love, there's two very important verses in the chapter, especially commented upon by our acharyas, where the verse that starts apichet, apichet means even if, apichet sudaracharo. Achar means behavior or conduct, and durachar is bad conduct, and sudurachar is very bad conduct, very bad, abominable behavior. Even if, apichet, sudaracharo, if my devotee does that, sudaracharo, if the driving principle in their life is fixed in devotion to me. Bhajate mam ananya bhak. Ananya means undivided, no other. Ananya bhak, they're unmixed devotees. Supposing this unmixed devotee, unflinchingly devoted to me, does some really bad thing. Krishna says, I consider him a sadhu. Meaning, we should also consider him a sadhu. Sadhureva samantavya. And then the next verse he says, because I dwell in within their heart. Correct. That person, that devotee, that whatever he needs to do, bonk us on the side of the head or get us in the middle of the road or something, so we're properly situated again. Quickly. Kipram bhavati dharmatma. Very quickly Krishna does that. Why? It's not his partiality. He's reciprocating with that unflinching devotion. So there's a verse in this section where he says, I'm partial to no one. And that's his role as super soul. And then he speaks, the second half of the verse, his Bhagavan feature, his personal feature. My devotee is very special. It's not a contradiction, it's natural. Prabhupada gives this example. Supposing parents of a large family, many children, they have affection for all their children. But one of their children, amongst the many children, is especially affectionate. Very, very, very affectionate. So it's not like they don't like the other children, but they naturally have reciprocal affection for the child that's very affectionate. It's just natural. So Krishna's like that. Those that feel affection for him, he reciprocates with their affection for him. It's natural. So for his this is his personal feature, not his position as the high court judge or something. It's his, Prabhupada makes this distinction. There was some, I forget. There was a man who, highly positioned officer in the British government, Lord something or other in the British government. And somebody went to see Lord somebody or other, and he had an appointment, and he sat in the waiting room. The secretary said that he's busy right now. Lord so-and-so is busy. But when he's done, you can come. So he waited and he waited and he got really impatient. So he just busted in the room. And there was Lord something or other on his knees and hands, and his grandson was climbing on his back playing horsey. Giddy up! Pow! So, in his office, he's, Lord so-and-so. And with his family members, it's just affection. Same person. So the feature of super soul is he's, equal to all. Not partial to anyone. And in his feature as Bhagavan, he's reciprocating with the affection of his devotees, and he's helping his devotees become properly situated. Even if apichet, they make some big mistake. Or Prabhupada gives this comparison. So the tide of the ocean, it comes in and it goes out. And every day it goes in and it goes out. But one time maybe there's a tsunami, tidal wave. And everything that's normally the tide stops doesn't stop. And then after the tsunami is over, the tide goes back to where it was, comes in and comes out. So that irregular circumstantial situation where someone does something that's very bad by dint of tsunami-like effect, some extreme test of their determination or patience or restraint or something, and they do something bad. The test is, aftermath, it's back to, because their standard is fixed devotion, Bhajate Mam Ananyabhav. That hasn't changed. And so the circumstances may be extreme and radical in some bad behavior before, always, and immediately thereafter, and thereafter that. It's just standard behavior, because it's supported by unmixed devotion. So that's this chapter. And he ends, of course, with the famous verse, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your obeisances unto me. And in this way, surely you will come to me. So this is, surely you will come to me is reiterating the end of chapter 8, which is attaining the Supreme. Okay? That's chapter 9. Now we're going to have some fun and hear the narration, a little description. So here's the beginning section.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I should impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you should be relieved from the miseries of material existence. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed.
So that's the Mahima section. It's very wonderful. Raja Vidya, Raja Guyam, Pavitram, Idam Uttamam, Pratyaksha Avakarmam Dharmyam. It's meant to give direct perception, not just theoretical, beyond theoretical. Direct perception of the self by realization. And susukam, very, very pleasing. Joyfully performed.
Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in this material world.
So, this is a little, consideration is, if this is so wonderful, all this Mahima description, why don't more people take to it? That's a natural question. The devotional service is so easy, joyful, and sublime, then why isn't everybody engaged in devotional service? And Krishna's answer is because they don't have faith. And there are different reasons why people don't have faith. Some just don't know. They've never been introduced to the teachings. Some have, but they don't believe it. Some are always just in the space of being doubtful. And they can't commit to anything. They're hesitant in their life in general. And even those that then have some introduction, and Krishna speaks his words again and again, very clearly and convincingly, the supreme position of bhakti, which is the way by which one can understand Krishna, they're not prepared. They think it's some exaggeration, it's unscientific, just sentimental, uneducated people go for it. I'm not like that. I want things proven to me. Or some people are just so distracted and they're not at all interested. Although it's joyful and everlasting and so wonderful. Prabhupada often used the example of the Dr. Frog, as you see over there, that, you know which one is Dr. Frog. and he's at the bottom of his well, and someone visits him and tells him about the Pacific Ocean, and describes how big the Pacific Ocean is in comparison to his well. So the frog says, well, is it twice as big as this well? No, much, much bigger. How much bigger? 5 times bigger? 10 times bigger? So he's trying to imagine what's beyond his experience based upon his experience. But it's beyond his experience. And so he's not able to invest faith in that which is beyond his experience. He wants to measure it and experimentally know it before he can place his faith. But the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita doesn't work that way. It works on hearing, not blind faith. Not at all blind faith. But upon submissive hearing, then one can start to understand. This is a definition that comes given by Lord Chaitanya for faith. It's unflinching trust in something sublime. That simply, what's that something sublime? Simply by serving Krishna, one can achieve all perfection. Just as by pouring water on the root of a tree, all the leaves and branches and trunk and flowers and fruits and everything, every part of the tree is nourished by putting water on the root of a tree. So similarly, if we can identify the root of all existence, we just invest in the root of all existence and all existence flourishes. So he's establishing in this initial section, faith is a most important, if not the most important factor in the progress of spiritual knowledge. But it's not just like a feeling, but it's very practical, where we apply ourselves according to that faith, where even there's distraction, we don't get distracted. Even there's some hesitation, we don't hesitate. We at least progressively move on this path of acting with clarity and conviction. And there's a whole chapter of Bhagavad Gita called Divisions of Faith, where Arjuna says, my dear Lord Krishna, people don't have faith in you, well, they have faith in something else. In other words, is faith intrinsic to the soul? And the answer is yes. They'll have faith in something else. According to the modes of nature, they'll have faith in something else. So how do we get faith in Krishna, or faith in transcendental life? Again and again, the scriptures teach us that it's through the association of devotees. This is a king, King Prachinibari, and he's hearing from Narada Muni. And by hearing from Narada Muni, his practical addiction to fruitive activities, religious but fruitive activities, became transformed into pure devotion just by hearing from Narada, by that association. And we associate by hearing. Here is Shukadeva Goswami speaking and Maharaj Parikshit hearing. And over on the right side is Prabhupada speaking and the assembly of new devotees in the Hare Krishna movement hearing from Prabhupada, and where Prabhupada is just describing the words of Krishna spoken to Arjuna. And by hearing respectfully, then faith develops. And then following from that faith comes practical service with humility. This is the king, Prataparudra, who very much was devoted to Lord Chaitanya, and because of his mood of humble service, Lord Chaitanya gave him this opportunity of some personal service and hearing from him the message of Krishna. A prime example of this is Narada Muni, found in the Srimad Bhagavatam in Canto 1, Chapter 6. Narada describes to Vyas how he became fixed by the process of hearing and humble service. And the description goes that he was the son of a maid servant, a lady who worked, her occupation was at a dharmshala, Prabhupada writes it as an inn, And during the rainy season, persons would come, the saintly persons would come and stay there. And because he was helping his mother, he had the opportunity to render various services. For 4 months, he would bring their meals. And as he was doing that service, he would then hear their conversations. And they appreciated whatever other little things needed help with, or washing their clothing, or some simple something, something a little boy can do. So he hit in the combination of his serving and his hearing, they naturally developed some affection for him and began giving him some personal instruction, and they taught him a process of meditation. They gave him a mantra because he was very gentle and interested, and they gave him remnants of their food. It's described, with their permission, he took remnants of their food and he felt his contaminations of sin were being eradicated very quickly. And he felt enlivened spiritually, and the whole process of transcendence became, even he was very small, became very attractive. And after some time, rainy season was over, they all left. But while they were there, he felt, this is taken directly from verses spoken by Narada, as my taste developed, I could realize that it was only in my ignorance that I had accepted gross and subtle coverings, for both the Lord and I are transcendental. But even little, the combination of hearing and serving and receiving mercy from saintly persons, he became spiritually elevated. By that most confidential knowledge, I could understand clearly the influence of the energy of Lord Sri Krishna, the creator, maintainer, annihilator of everything. By knowing that, one can return to him and personally meet him. So after they left, his mother was one day going to fetch some water from the well, and a snake bit her, and she died. So here's this little boy, with no father, no mother, and he didn't panic and cry. He just understood somehow this is a plan of the Lord. Destiny, providence is prevailing. But I do have this wonderful gift that I received from the saintly persons. And so he packed his little bag and off he went, traveling about, experiencing the world in the forests, in the towns, in the cities, different features of life, alone. And every morning and every evening, he would perform this practice that he was given by these saintly persons. And then one day, after some time, he describes to Narada, under the shadow of a banyan tree in an uninhabited forest, I began to meditate upon the Supersoul situated within, just as they taught him. And amazingly, the form of the Supersoul appeared in his heart. He saw with spiritual eyes, and he felt ecstasy, transcendental ecstasy. Tears were streaming down his eyes. And just as suddenly as the Lord appeared, the Lord then disappeared. And then a sound came from the sky saying, normally I'm not seen unless one is fully qualified, but I wanted to encourage you. So please continue for the rest of your life like this. You will not see me for the rest of your life, but know that I'm there, and at the end of your life, you'll come to me. So he did that, fully absorbed in thinking of Krishna. He lived his life in that way, and then suddenly, the moment of death came, very interesting way to describe, as lightning and illumination occurs simultaneously, he gave up the physical body, and a transcendental body was manifest. So that's Narada Muni. So he came from a obscure nobody to a perfected soul, just by the process of association, as described, hearing, serving, taking remnants of food. Then he describes in conclusion, it was the Lord's arrangement, as all living entities at the time of cosmic annihilation at the end of the day of Brahma enter again into the body of the Supreme Lord. He also entered into the body of the Supreme Lord. And after 4,320,000,000 years, solar years, at the beginning of Brahma's next day, he appeared as the son of Brahma. And now he's speaking to Vyasa. Since then, by the grace of Almighty Vishnu, I travel everywhere without restriction, in both the transcendental world and in the three divisions of the material world. Being fixed in unbroken devotional service, I constantly travel singing the glories of the Lord, vibrating this instrument called a veena, which is charged with transcendental sound and which is given to me by Lord Krishna. So that's Narada's life as an example of one who is faithful hearing and the fruits of that.
Krishna's unmanifested form pervades everything, but Krishna himself remains detached from that. Material nature, working under his direction, produces all moving and non-moving beings.
So there's the relationship of Krishna with nature, and then the living beings that are generated within that nature, all by Krishna's divine arrangement. It's his relationship with material nature. That's this section.
By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, I am not in them. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence.
This painting of Krishna is showing Lord Brahma his mystic opulence. It's the Brahma Vimohan Lila. Brahma had put the calves and cowherd boys into a cave, and he came back, and there was the calves and the cowherd boys. They went back to the cave, and they were still in the cave, and he came back, and there's the cowherd boys having their lunch. Then all of a sudden, the cowherd boys weren't to be seen, but all these forms of Narayan, surrounded by the various demigods and the personified Vedas and so forth. So he realized that by mystic opulence, Krishna manifested the cowherd boys and the calves, as Krishna manifests everything from his potency, but his potency. It's the relationship between him and his potency. It's his potency. Although it rests in him, he has his own separate existence. So as everything rests in Krishna, it's not like, you know, somebody with big biceps like Atlas in Greek mythology holds a globe on his shoulders. This is a photograph taken from Rockefeller Center in Fifth Avenue. They have an Atlas holding up the globe. Krishna's not like that. That's not the right understanding, at least from Bhagavad Gita. Rather, Krishna is aloof. The modes of nature are under his direction, and the modes of nature are moving all living beings through his inconceivable potencies, while Krishna is aloof, although it doesn't happen without his sanction. On the one hand, he's different from the material manifestation, yet at the same time he's present within every atom of material creation. So this is the mystic power of Krishna.
Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everyone, I am not a part of this cosmic manifestation. For myself is the very source of creation. Understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature. And at the beginning of another millennium, by my frequency, I create them again. The whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again. And under my will, it is annihilated at the end. Oh, Dhananjaya, all this work cannot bind me. I am ever detached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction for some reason. Producing all moving and non-moving beings. Foolish persons do not know Krishna's transcendental and supreme nature. They consider the human-like form of the Lord to be material. The great souls, however, are undiluted.
Can you hear okay? A little difficult. So, that ends the previous section. His relationship with matter, the material creation is extended by him, the living entities filling up the universe are coming from him. They're, again, at the time of annihilation by his will, they're withdrawn, they rest in him, but he is aloof. That is to say, he's not changed by all of that. In any phase, he's the unchanged. Then this is speaking about the form. The form of Krishna is not understood, as was said at the very beginning, by those who don't have faith or those that are envious. So those that don't have faith and those that are envious, when they hear of the form of the Supreme, they say some not nice things, some offensive things toward Krishna. They can't understand and they don't understand. So Krishna is making a contrast between those and the great souls. The great souls are those that take shelter of his internal potency, and they're engaged in his loving service, and they understand who he is, and they're feeling great happiness in that position. Like, you know, the illustration is very nice. There's this cloud, and then, you know, beyond the cloud there is Krishna, but within the cloud is dark.
Who is the right way when I descend the human form? I do not know my transcendental nature as a supreme one of all that be. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demonic atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their future activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. O son of Krita, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion.
So those are the two verses in this section that are describing unmixed devotion. That's the goal. The very next verse is going to describe these three. Next verse is 9:15. So, Ekatvena, worshipping oneself as the Supreme. Pratakvena, worshipping the many as the Supreme. And worshipping the universal form. And then, what it, more about them and the destination of them. Okay, so these are, again, this inclusive-exclusive. This is the inclusive part. They're worshippers, and Krishna appreciates very liberally that they're also worshipping me, but not done properly. But then there's, he'll go next, after this, to the unmixed devotion.
Others who engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge worship the Supreme Lord as the one without a second, as diverse in many, and in the universal form. But it is I who am the ritual. I, the sacrifice, the offering to the ancestors, the healing herb, the transcendental chant, I am the butter and the fire and the offering. I am the father of this universe, the mother, the support, and the grandson. I am the object of knowledge, the purifier, and the sacred organ. I am also the Rig, the Sama, and the Yajur Vedas. I am the goal. The sustainer, the master, the witness. The abodes, the refuge. And the most dear friend. I am the creation and the annihilation, the basis of everything. The resting place in the eternal sea. O Arjuna, I give heat, and I withhold and send forth the rain. I am immortality, and I am also death personified. Both spirit and matter are in me.
Different worshippers reach different goals. Many want to attain heavenly planets, worship the demigods, and then they burn them on them to enjoy the tattooed delights. But such men, after exhausting their pious friends, return to earth. Men who worship ancestors go to the planets of the ancestors, and those who worship ghosts become ghosts. The one who worships Krishna with exclusive devotion goes to him forever.
So after going through those categories of worship, we're now getting a picture of the destination of the various worshippers.
Those who study the Vedas and drink the Soma juice, seeking the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly. Purified of simple reactions, they take birth in the pious heavenly planet of Indra, where they enjoy godly delights. When they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure, and the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus, those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas achieve only repeated birth and death. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack. deserve what they have. Those who are devotees of other gods and can worship them with faith, actually worship only me. But they do so in a wrong way.
We're almost done. I'm going on for a bit here. Again, the same image. One may try to pour water in the branch or the tree or the leaf or the trunk, but simply pour water on the root. And there's regular principles for serving the root of all existence, and the benefits to be derived and the purposes fulfilled are by the Pratakdvena Bahuda, the worship of demigods, is taken care of simply in one stroke by the bhakti process. That's the indication here.
I am the only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices. Therefore, those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. Those who worship the demigods will take birth on them. Those who worship the ancestors go to the ancestors. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth on them. Those who worship me will live there.
So that's the transcendental destination of those that are Krishna's identifying. Their worship Krishna in this life. You saw that devotee sitting before the deities and worshiping and chanting. This is the destination that he's indicating. They'll live with me. And then?
Whatever Krishna's devotee does, eats, offers, or gives away in charity, he does as an offering unto the Lord. Krishna reciprocates by carrying what his devotee lacks and preserving what he has. By taking shelter of Krishna, even low-born persons can attain a supreme destination.
He looks to the devotion, even if one's intellectual capacity isn't so great, or one's birth isn't so great, or one's karma isn't so great. Krishna overlooks that, and he looks to the devotion within, and he carries what that person lacks and preserves what they have. This is a verse of this chapter. Very nice. An important verse. What happened?
If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that as an offering to me. In this way, you will be freed from bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me and this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and come to me. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion, is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. Even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his determination. he quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace. The son of Kunti declared it boldly that my devotee never perishes. O son of Krita, those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower birth, women, Vaishyas, merchants, Sudras, workers, can attain the supreme destination. How much more this is so with the righteous Brahmins, the devotees and the saintly kings. Therefore, having come to this temporary miserable world, engage in loving service unto me. Engage your mind always thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances to me and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me.
This is Arjuna and Krishna going to Mahavishnu to look for the son of the Brahmana of Dwarka who disappeared. Of the sons. This is Sadaputa's work. So that's the end of the chapter. We have now a little summary of chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita, and tomorrow we'll discuss chapter 10. So any discussion or questions? Anybody?
I have a doubt in there. Not from this chapter, from another chapter.
Another chapter, sure. Yes. Break the silence, good.
There is a verse here. Na kartutam, na karbani, yogasya sridhata prabhu. Na karma phalam, samyogam, sobhavastu pranathade. Krishna says he doesn't have the ownership for the what is happening to in the world. Na kartutva, na karmani, yogasya prajata prati. Na karma phala samyoga, svabhavastu pravartate. What is happening is because of the character of that particular person. So does it mean that the character of a person is good? Even without devotion to Lord Krishna, he will get the blessings.
There's two things.
Yeah.
Devotion and karma, which you pointed out. There's two things. And the laws of karma apply to those who are not devotees. The laws of karma do not apply to those who are devotees. It's another set of laws. It's the internal potency laws. So, then you use this word blessings. Well, from a worldly perspective, blessings are something material. From the position of devotion, blessings are not measured by something material. Measured by being connected to the Supreme, being in that relationship with the Supreme, and being eternally situated in the Supreme, wherever one may be, and whatever the external circumstances may be. seeming.
That comes only with devotion.
Yes, with devotion comes the internal potency and another set of rules. The internal potency rules, loving devotion to Krishna rules. And the external potency has the rules of karma. So one gets the blessings, or, you know, good fortune, ill fortune, according to that one's, you know, good karma, bad karma. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunkte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sango sya sad asad yoni janmasu. Chapter 13, Krishna speaks of the sad and asad, the good fortune, ill fortune, blessings and, you know, calamities in life come from our, how we choose to be situated within prakriti, and we get the fruits. Blessings, as you use the word. That's the karmic part. Supposing, you know, a living entity has the transcendental good fortune, like Narada in his previous life, the son of a maidservant of the association of elevated saintly personalities, Bhakti Vedantas, if according to the language of the Bhagavatam, they're learned in bhakti, and they passed on bhakti into the heart of that child, and he became a perfected being. Now, is that a blessing? It's another kind, the spiritual, transcendental kind. And the result of that blessing was another kind. Not, you know, wealth, or good education, or beauty, or something, good birth. It was transcendental life.
So good karma will be rewarded, right?
It's not exactly good karma. It's beyond good karma. Here's another way of saying the same thing. There's a light source.
Yes.
And here's an object, and then over there is the shadow of the object. So as the thing that's casting the shadow moves, the shadow moves. So supposing there's spiritual well-being, material well-being will follow. But it's not the essence. Material well-being isn't the essence. It's the spiritual well-being. Now supposing one doesn't have spiritual well-being, but they have some piety, or an impiety and mix. They're just in the shadow realm, because the spiritual well-being has got forgotten. And I'm cultivating, you know, piety. And when we get the fruits of piety, good and bad and mixed. And it's by good fortune, somebody over here says, hey, wait a minute. There's spiritual well-being, don't forget that. And work and focus on that. And the other will follow. Just focus on this.
It comes along with the spiritual.
Yes. Yeah. There may be, to be more complete and fair, in the lives of such persons, like Maharaj Pritchett was a great devotee, and some calamity came. Of course, he did something, he made a big boo-boo. That was one of the pictures. He did something abominable. He placed a dead snake over the body of a sage in meditation. Very bad. The purpose of that, though, was Krishna's intention was to take Maharaj Pritchett back to the spiritual world and to have him be the receiver of Srimad Bhagavatam so we could have Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah. So it looked like, oh, this is awful. Why did something bad happen to somebody so good? But it was good. Transcendentally good. Although externally it looked bad. He was cursed to die in 7 days. And he did something bad too. Bad. Or other examples. Prahlad Maharaj was also shown. So, you know, innocent child, pure devotee. But he was protected. You know, his father got liberated. And, you know, so forth. So, the external evaluation or examination of a life of a great person, a saintly person, the Pandavas, so much difficulty. Bhishma Dev, pacifying the Pandavas. You shouldn't have survived. A normal person couldn't have survived. So who can understand the plan of the Lord? But He protected you in each of these calamities. So, external examination cannot always detect. These are extreme cases, but it can't always detect the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Those that don't have the eyes to see can't see the hand of the Supreme Lord. One who is very faithful can. At least in time it becomes disclosed to them. Okay? Anything else? Thank you for that nice question. Nice for to learn Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Let's see what happens with chapter 10. Chapter 10 is a very special chapter also. Hare Krishna. So, I was just in Los Angeles, and the deities there are Rukmini Dwarkandish. And I asked the pujaris, here's a box, can you put some Mahaprasad from Rukmini Dwarkandish in this box? So that when I come to visit Phoenix, I can give out Rukmini Dwarkandish Mahaprasad. And they said, sure. So. Here's some Mahaprasad from the deities. I'm going to walk around and give some out. I guess prasad will be served soon.